This is Nikki Strong, and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, Katie Weaver has a report on the Hollywood writers' strike. Faith Perlow answers a question from an English learner in Russia. Finally, we present the American story, Paul Bunyan, an American folktale. But first, here is Katie Weaver.
Hollywood writers went on strike this week to demand higher pay and job security. The labor action forced an immediate suspension of late-night television shows and other programs and projects. The writers' labor action is the first Hollywood strike in 15 years. The union Writers Guild of America, or WGA, is seeking higher minimum pay, more writers per show, and less exclusivity on single projects, among other demands. The 11,500-member guild argues that all the demands concern conditions that have worsened since the huge growth in streaming media. "Everything's changed, but the money has changed in the wrong direction," said Kelly Galuska. The 39-year-old is a writer for The Bear, an FX show, and Big Mouth, a program on Netflix. She was among striking workers who demonstrated at Fox Studios in Los Angeles. "It's a turning point in the industry right now, and if we don't get back to even, we never will," she said. The last Hollywood strike from the same union in 2007 and 2008 took 3 months to settle. There are no talks planned between the WGA and the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers, or AMPTP. It represents studios and production companies that employ the writers. "We'll stay out as long as it takes," said Josh Gad. He is a writer for shows including Central Park and an actor in films including Frozen. Gad spoke from the Fox picket line. An AMPTP statement said the organization presented an offer with generous increases in compensation for writers. It said leaders were also prepared to improve the offer, but were put off, it said, because of the magnitude of other proposals the WGA was presenting. The writers expected to go on strike. Negotiations over a new contract ended suddenly hours before the time limit passed for an agreement to be reached. The reality of a strike left some people surprised, some worried, and some determined. "When I saw the refusals to counter and the refusing to even negotiate by the AMPTP, I was like on fire to get out here and stand up for what we deserve," said John Terry Gadsden. She is a writer whose credits include A Black Lady Sketch Show. On a picket line at Amazon Studios, She held a sign that said, "I hate it here." New productions of top late night shows were canceled. That is because the striking writers are the ones who write jokes for the show's hosts. Instead, television chiefs made plans for reruns for the rest of the week. NBC's comedy show, Saturday Night Live, which had been set to broadcast a new program Saturday, will air a rerun instead. The two remaining programs in the season might be canceled. The strike's effect on weekly series and films will likely take longer to see. If the strike continues through the summer, plans for autumn television programming could be affected. Right now, shows for which the writing has been completed are permitted to continue with production. Streaming has led to an explosion in the number of series and film productions made each year. That has meant more jobs for writers. But writers say they make less money under insecure conditions. The WGA described the new environment as a gig economy inside a union workforce. Economic activity involving temporary or freelance work is often called a gig economy. The AMPTP said terms necessary to reach a deal involve so-called mini-rooms. Industry publications say mini-rooms are similar to temporary writing jobs that can prevent writers from taking other jobs. Writers want a minimum number of them. How long employment contracts last is another issue being negotiated. Writers are also seeking more rules about the use of artificial intelligence. I'm Katie Weaver.
This week on Ask a Teacher, we will answer a question about the difference between spin and rotate. Dear teacher, my name is Alex. I'm from Russia. Your content is part of the learning English process for me. So I'd love to ask you a question about a couple English words that make me confused. What is the exact difference between spin and rotate? Thank you for your time, Alexander. This is an interesting question, Alex. Spin and rotate as verbs both involve circular movement. They are synonyms, but there may be situations when one sounds better than the other. Let's start with rotate. Rotate is a verb that means to turn in a circular motion around a center point. The verb can take a direct object or not. The Earth rotates around the sun, no direct object. I rotated the globe on the desk to find Helsinki, Finland. Direct object. When we think of rotate, we might consider the action of rotating to be slower than spinning. Rotate also has another meaning. Rotate can mean to take turns or to pass or change something in a series. We should rotate our car's tires every 5,000 to 7,000 miles. Now, let's look at spin. The verb spin also means to turn in a circular motion on a center point, much like rotate. But we typically think of spin as being faster than rotate. The dancer spins fast on one foot. Spin also has two other specific meanings as verbs. The first one means to make fiber into thread or yarn. She spins wool from sheep into yarn using a spinning wheel. The second meaning is when insects, like spiders, make thread from their bodies to create webs. In the book, Charlotte's Web, Charlotte the Spider spins a web with the words "some pig" in it for her friend Wilbur. Spin can also be a noun with several meanings. Those meanings connect to the verbal meanings above. A spin is a fast turn. It can also mean a quick or fun ride in a vehicle. Let's take the car out for a quick spin. Spin can also mean mental confusion or physical dizziness. There was a popular song in the 1980s about this kind of spinning. A spin can also be presenting something in an unusual way. The restaurant puts a Mediterranean spin on popular American food dishes. Please let us know if these explanations and examples have helped you, Alex. What question do you have about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Faith Perlow.
Was Faith Perlow with this week's Ask a Teacher. Faith is here now to talk more about these words. Welcome back, Faith.
Thanks, Ashley. This week's question was from Alex, a listener in Russia. He wanted to know the difference between spin and rotate. There were a couple more definitions that we covered about spin. If your head feels like it is spinning, that means that you are either confused or that you feel physically sick, like you are dizzy. Has your head ever felt like it was spinning before, Ashley?
When I was younger, if I stood up too quickly, sometimes my head would spin. I might have had low blood pressure. What about you, Faith?
My head spins when I go on roller coasters or any fast amusement park rides. The spinning gets so bad that I get vertigo easy. So the slight spinning turns into whirling, and the dizziness causes me to lose my balance.
That sounds intense.
It is, and it's sad because I really like roller coasters.
Are there times when your head spins and it is because you are confused or overwhelmed?
When I go to the gym, my head spins, and not because of the exercise. It is just a really overwhelming place to be. So many people, so many different types of equipment and machines. What about you, Ashley?
Honestly, my head spins when I'm trying to learn a new language, especially if I am surrounded by native speakers of that language. It's like information overload. Well, thanks for sharing your different examples, Faith. We will talk to you again next week.
Thanks for having me, Ashley.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
Today, we tell a traditional American story called A Tall Tale. A Tall Tale is a story about a person who is larger than life. The descriptions in the story are exaggerated, much greater than in real life. This makes the story funny. Long ago, the people who settled in undeveloped areas in America first told tall tales. After a hard day's work, people gathered to tell each other funny stories. Each group of workers had its own tall tale hero. Paul Bunyan was a hero of North America's lumberjacks, the workers who cut down trees. He was known for his strength, speed, and skill. Tradition says he cleared forests from the northeastern United States to the Pacific Ocean. Some people say Paul Bunyan was the creation of storytellers from the middle western Great Lakes area of the United States. Other people say the stories about him came from French Canada. Early in the 20th century, a writer prepared a collection of Paul Bunyan stories. They were included in a publication from the Red River Lumber Company in Minnesota. It is not known if the stories helped the company's sales, but they became extremely popular. Here is Shep O'Neill with our story about Paul Bunyan.
Many years ago, Paul Bunyan was born in the northeastern American state of Maine. His mother and father were shocked when they first saw the boy. Paul was so large at birth that 5 large birds had to carry him to his parents. When the boy was only a few weeks old, he weighed more than 45 kilograms. As a child, Paul was always hungry. His parents needed 10 cows to supply milk for his meals. Before long, he ate 50 eggs and 10 containers of potatoes every day. Young Paul grew so big that his parents did not know what to do with him. Once, Paul rolled over so much in his sleep that he caused an earthquake. This angered people in the town where his parents lived, so the government told his mother and father they would have to move him somewhere else. Paul's father built a wooden cradle, a traditional bed for a baby. His parents put the cradle in waters along the coast of Maine. However, every time Paul rolled over, huge waves covered all the coastal towns. So his parents brought their son back on land. They took him into the woods. This is where he grew up. As a boy, Paul helped his father cut down trees. Paul had the strength of many men. He also was extremely fast. He could turn off a light and then jump into his bed before the room got dark. Maine is very cold for much of the year. One day, it started to snow. The snow covered Paul's home and a nearby forest. However, this snow was very unusual. It was blue. The blue snow kept falling until the forest was covered. Paul put on his snowshoes and went out to see the unusual sight. As he walked, Paul discovered an animal stuck in the snow. It was a baby ox. Paul decided to take the ox home with him. He put the animal near the fireplace. After the ox got warmer, his hair remained blue. Paul decided to keep the blue ox and named him Babe. Babe grew very quickly. One night, Paul left him in a small building with the other animals. The next morning, the barn was gone, and so was Babe. Paul searched everywhere for the animal. He found Babe calmly eating grass in a valley, with the barn still on top of his back. Babe followed Paul and grew larger every day. Every time Paul looked, Babe seemed to grow taller. In those days, much of North America was filled with thick green forests. Paul Bunyan could clear large wooded areas with a single stroke of his large, sharp axe. Paul taught Babe to help with his work. Babe was very useful. For example, Paul had trouble removing trees along a road that was not straight. He decided to tie one end of the road to what remained of a tree in the ground. Paul tied the other end to Babe. Babe dug his feet in the ground and pulled with all his strength until the road became straight. In time, Paul and Babe the Blue Ox left Maine and moved west to look for work in other forests. Along the way, Paul dug out the Great Lakes to provide drinking water for Babe. They settled in a camp near the Onion River in the state of Minnesota. Paul's camp was the largest in the country. The camp was so large that a man had to have 1 week's supply of food when walking from one side of the camp to the other. Paul decided to get other lumberjacks to help with the work. His work crew became known as the Seven Axe Men. Each man was more than 2 meters tall and weighed more than 160 kilograms. All of the axemen were named Elmer. That way, they all came running whenever Paul called them. The man who cooked for the group was named Sourdough Sam. He made everything, except coffee, from sourdough, a substance used in making sourdough bread. Every Sunday, Paul and his crew ate hotcakes. Each hotcake was so large that it took 5 men to eat one. Paul usually had 10 or more hotcakes, depending on how hungry he was. The table where the men ate was so long that a server usually drove to one end of the table and stayed the night. The server drove back in the morning with a fresh load of food. Paul needed someone to help with the camp's finances. He gave the job to a man named Johnny Inkslinger. Johnny kept records of everything, including wages and the cost of feeding Babe. He sometimes used 9 containers of writing fluid a day to keep such detailed records. The camp also was home to Sport, the reversible dog. One of the workers accidentally cut Sport in two. The man hurried to put the dog back together, but made a mistake. He bent the animal's back the wrong way, However, that was not a problem for Sport. He learned to run on his front legs until he was tired. Then he turned the other way and ran on his back legs. Big mosquitoes were a problem at the camp. The men attacked the insects with their axes and long sticks. Before long, the men put barriers around their living space. Then Paul ordered them to get big bees to destroy the mosquitoes. But the bees married the mosquitoes, and the problem got worse. They began to produce young insects. One day, the insects' love of sweets caused them to attack a ship that was bringing sugar to the camp. At last, the mosquitoes and bees were defeated. They ate so much sugar, they could not move. Paul always gave Babe the Blue Ox a 35-kilogram piece of sugar when he was good, but sometimes Babe liked to play tricks. At night, Babe would make noises and hit the ground with his feet. The men at the camp would run out of the buildings where they slept, thinking it was an earthquake. When winter came, Babe had trouble finding enough food to eat. Snow covered everything. Ole, the blacksmith, solved the problem. He made huge green sunglasses for Babe. When Babe wore the sunglasses, he thought the snow was grass. Before long, Babe was strong and healthy again. One year, Paul's camp was especially cold. It was so cold that the men let their facial hair grow very long. When the men spoke, their words froze in the air. Everything they said remained frozen all winter long and did not melt until spring. Paul Bunyan and Babe left their mark on many areas. Some people say they were responsible for creating Puget Sound in the western state of Washington. Others say Paul Bunyan and Babe cleared the trees from the states of North Dakota and South Dakota. They prepared this area for farming. Babe the Blue Ox died in South Dakota. One story says he ate too many hotcakes. Paul buried his old friend there. Today, the burial place is known as the Black Hills. Whatever happened to Paul Bunyan? There are lots of stories. Some people say he was last seen in Alaska, or even the Arctic Circle. Another tradition says he still returns to Minnesota every summer. It says Paul moves in and out of the woods, so few people ever know that he is there.
That's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.